believe you are God and in control.
Welcome to the Worship Generation Radio Ministry with Pastor Joey Brand, a ministry of Worship Generation Church located in Fountain Valley, California. For more information, please visit us at www.worshipgeneration.com.
We believe in the power of the gospel. We believe you can transform every soul. We believe you're the Savior.
Now let's join Pastor Joey as we study through the Bible.
Let the nations be glad, all his saints rejoice, and let the
So he says this in chapter 12, verse 1, after talking about being delivered from Damascus, the event that you read about in the book of Acts. It is doubtless not profitable for me to boast. I will come to visions and revelations of the Lord. I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago, whether in the body I do not know or whether out of the body I do not know, God knows, such a one was caught up to the third heaven. And I know such a man, whether in the body or out of the body, I do not know, God knows, how he was caught up into paradise and heard inexpressible words, which is not lawful for a man to utter. Of such a one I will boast, yet of myself I will not boast except in my infirmities. For though I might desire to boast, I will not be a fool. For I will speak the truth, but I refrain lest anyone should think of me above what he sees me or hears from me. And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of revelations, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. So here in the beginning of this chapter, we find this text that's pretty familiar text if you know your New Testament well. It's where Paul talks about the heavenly vision. And he talks about it in the second person sense, but of course he is the first person, as even clarifies in verse 7, that lest he be exalted by the revelations God gave him, he had a thorn in the flesh, which we'll get to in a moment as another point of application. But first of all, the whole idea of the third heaven, it's commonly translated and considered that the first heaven is the atmosphere, the second heaven is space, and the third heaven is literally outside of time, space, and matter where the Lord dwells, the third heaven. Now, in Paul's testimony last week, he talked about being shipwrecked and beaten and whipped and scourged and all these things. But we do know about where he was stoned there in Derbe in his first missionary trip there with Barnabas. And he was as good as dead, and they thought he was dead. And then he came back to life and went back into the city and preached some more. And it was quite mind-boggling for his traveling partners to see his faith and just his boldness in that situation. And most people believe that that is where, when he was maybe literally flatlined, possibly, whatever the case might be, he was in the presence of the Lord and the glory of the Lord and those things. Now, we see in the Bible, there are times, of course, when God's glory comes down, when Moses at the burning bush and God says, take off your sandals, you're on holy ground. We know that when the command of the Lord's army, most likely Jesus Christ, appeared to Joshua, and Joshua said, are you for us or against us? And he goes, no, but as the command of the Lord's army, I'm now here. And Joshua falls down and worships him, and he receives that worship. And we've talked about this, that there are times when in the realm of time, space, and matter, eternity comes into it, and the fourth dimension, eternal dimension, supersedes it. Sort of like, definitely, Meshach, Shadrach, and Abednego is the clearest example, where they're in the furnace and they're not burnt, they don't smell, and yet in time, space, and matter, Nebuchadnezzar sees them in there, so it's really happening in time, space, and matter, but they're in another dimension because Nebuchadnezzar says, oh, there's one like the sons of God walking with them in the midst, and I put three and I see four. So that would be a clear example of eternal dimension taking over that. Okay, and the chariot coming from Elijah, another example. That's a chariot coming out of eternity, the other dimension, and picking him up and taking him into eternity, and his coat falls off. That's matter. That's time, space, and matter. That's matter, the coat falling off to Elisha. But Elijah goes up in the chariot, and then boom, it's like curtain closes, and he's gone. Different dimension, like a portal, okay? And so we know that there's a whole other dimension. It's the spiritual realm. It's the eternal dimension. And Christ is our bridge to get us safely to our home, where our Father has many mansions for us in that dimension. He goes to prepare a place for us, Jesus said. So what happened here with Paul is we know that he was caught up. Now, whenever God revealed to the prophets the glory of heaven and the glory of the Lord and the kingdom, like John in the book of Revelation, for example, or Ezekiel in the book of Ezekiel, you know, sometimes you read this stuff, you're like, oh, my, like, you know, like the seven eyes that are the seven spirits. And you're like, huh, you know, like there's certain parts just go, okay, I'm trying to wrap my mind around this. But when you see the 24 elders saying, holy, holy, worthy, worthy is the lamb, you know, that was slain before the foundation of the world, you can kind of picture that one. Like if you've been in a large corporate worship setting where you just feel the Holy Spirit falling, and it's like, you can kind of sense that one. But what's interesting here is that it's what he heard that is inexpressible. I often think about what he might have saw or seen. And, you know, when Elijah saw the glory of the Lord, Ezekiel saw the glory of the Lord depart from the temple, things that we might see, visions. When John saw the Lord in his glory, he fell down as good as dead in Revelation, what he saw. But here, Paul, talking about himself in the second person, he says what he heard. That's interesting. You know, the senses that we have, we see, we smell, we touch, and what he heard. You know, as I mentioned, I grew up with two blind cousins, Kurt and Kate. In fact, Kate's actually coming to my mom's next week to visit with her blind husband, Mark. And growing up there, the intuitiveness that they had of the other senses was just incredible. And, you know, Kurt, I was very close with Kurt, and he could just hear anything and everything. He was just so aware. And as I shared, we used to play hide and seek in this huge house on Coventry Road there in Cleveland. And no matter where we hid, he would find us. And of course, he could walk through the house any way, shape, and form, and because he just knew it like no one's business. But he'd hear our heartbeat. Like he'd walk in the room, and of course, he'd terrify us too. It's like, Joey, I hear you, Joey. I hear you breathing in here. I'm coming for you. I'd be like, you know. But he could hear it, you know, and that sense. So I think what it'd be like when you hear more than what most people hear. We often say, did you hear the frequency of the Lord in that service? Like, did you hear what the Lord was saying? You can be somewhere and someone's talking, you don't even hear what they're saying. Pastor Chuck once said, I only heard him say it once from the parable of the soils, if 25% of the people you're teaching hear what you're saying, you're doing as good as Jesus said in the parable of the soils. He said to pastors, you should never presume everyone's hearing what you're saying because this and that. And how often are we distracted when someone's talking to us? And I mean, it's always the most embarrassing thing when your husband said, honey, what are you about? I said, I told you what I was going to do about that. He's like, oh man, I was distracted. You know, it's like, throw your phone away, right? You know, like that kind of a thing. Paul heard the frequency of heaven. And what he heard was inexpressible for this dimension. Maybe it was worship. Maybe it was the voice of the Lord. But whatever it was of the other dimension from the presence of God and not able to be articulated in our finite cognitive capacities. Which really gets me kind of fired up. Because it is like how it says in the Old Testament and then affirmed, as we saw in Corinthians, eyes not seen nor ear heard those things that God has prepared for them. And I just wonder, like, what it was that the Lord spoke to him, what it was that he heard, that if, in fact, it was in Derby when he was as good as dead, that he jumped right back up and right back in the city like there's no tomorrow. What was it that the Lord said? And what is it that the Lord would say to us from that dimension? Oh, we need faith. And we study this in Hebrews on Saturday nights for 13 weeks there. We need faith because the kingdom is apprehended by faith. This is something so for the evidence not yet seen. And it's we need to be reminded that all that we see and hear and touch and know and experience in time, space, and matter is it's nothing. Paul said to the Corinthians, the afflictions are not worthy to be compared to the eternal weight of glory, these light afflictions. So the worst, it's like eternity in the presence of the Lord is where it all comes together. It's where we enter into glory. It's the payoff. It's the reward. And whatever we think a reward could be in time, space, and matter, it is not worthy to be compared to what the rewards are in eternity. But we must have faith. We must have our eyes on Jesus. We must believe in the character of God. We need to trust in the promises of God. So when we get right there to the threshold of transitioning dimensions, that our faith is firmly on Christ, the anchor and hope of our soul, and that we know that we're going to hear things inexpressible for time, space, and matter. We're going to see glory that cannot be revealed in time, space, and matter. And we're going to enter into glory, and as He is, we're going to be with Him as the sons and daughters of glory. That's our hope. Heaven is our hope. And not that the objective of heaven is justice and vindication, but you can be sure that in heaven, that side of dimensions, all will be made straight. Will we think for a moment that God, who's perfect in character and perfect in His justice, is going to let one thing be unresolved that's an injustice perpetrated on the innocent in the human experience? Of course not. That's why there's no more tears. There's no more sorrow. Heaven's a glorious place. The kingdom is glorious. And Paul is reminding us here that it's glorious. And he was used mightily by God and entrusted with great vision and glory from God. But you know, the reality is, if you are walking on this planet and you've literally seen the Lord, you've literally heard things that no one else, 8 billion people on the planet, and God spoke them to you, you could be tempted to be puffed up. You could be tempted to be like, oh man, I was just like, you know, be like hanging out, you all go to Porto, you see Greg Laurie, like, dude, if Greg Laurie knew what I knew. I mean, he's a bad dude filling stadiums, right? You know, it's like, but if he knew what I knew, like, he talks about the Lord, I've seen the Lord. Can you see how that would work? Maybe like, man, that's how it worked for you, Joey, right? Okay, but can you see how that would work? So it just seems that is the case so often with the women and the men that God uses most mightily. They are buffeted, lest they be exalted. I look at Sarah Hill over there in Kauai, and her amazing ministries with all these young girls now for 17 years. But the tragedies that have surrounded her life from her father and his drug and alcohol abuse, and then being hit by a car and the coma and then the death, and then her with the three kids dying of cancer in her 40s. She just posted a picture of her sister yesterday. Might have been today, of her older sister and who died of cancer just like months ago. You know, it's like, just the heaviness. And not to mention all the things that she could have seen where kids were doing great with the Lord and they made bad decisions and the rest is bad. It's human history, right? Life is messy. Well, I think of Sarah Yardley and how fruitful she's been in England. But, you know, she's an amazing woman of God. But I cannot believe the viciousness of the enemies that she has. I became near to this when she visited our church about 18 months ago, and we took a picture together in the back with David Downs, who was visiting from Italy. And we just took this picture like, hey, fellowshipping at WG on a Saturday night. And I linked from Instagram onto Facebook, and all the attacks on Facebook against Sarah Yardley. And she actually contacted me. She goes, I am so sorry that you had to have people write stuff like that on your Facebook. I said, I just delete them. You know, it's kind of like life, you know, like there are things that you learn from these things, like now, delete. You ever start to respond to private videos? Oh, forget it, right? You're just like, nah. How many times you ever do that where you're like, I'm going to say, forget it. Yeah, just delete. We do get buffeted. Pastor Chuck had a lot of heartaches. Pastor Brian Broderson has had a tremendous amount of heartaches. He's planted dozens and dozens and dozens of churches all over the world. The fruit goes on and on and on. When he steps into eternity, they're going to be like dividends that pay off in eternity forever. Like, just keep going till time is done. People have no idea how fruitful Brian Broderson really is, the pastor of Calvary Costa Mesa. They see this. We don't see what's going on in Prague. We don't see what's going on in Budapest. We don't see what's going on in Subotica, in Serbia, in Yugoslavia. I was there when he stepped off the plane. I wasn't there in person, but I was there when he left the church in the early 90s when the Iron Curtain came down. And all that fruit now just keeps going and going and going and going. And Brian has been afflicted. I was there when they had to call the ambulance because he got excised and just fell over at Calvary Vista. He had a physical infirmity, like an Epstein-Barr thing, that lasted for years and was his thorn in the flesh. We literally called it that. The more God uses us, I think there's a greater potential that we're going to have something that just crushes us. It might be a wayward adult child. It might be the death of a child. It might be adult siblings creating havoc. It might be our parents creating havoc, or just the heartache of watching people not finish well or something. It might be our reputation slandered. But you know it's an opportunity for the Lord. And that's why Paul said, going on from the thorn in the flesh, he said in verse 8, concerning this thing that is the thorn in the flesh, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me. And he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Okay, so Paul says, therefore, most gladly, I would rather boast in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake, for when I am weak, then I am strong. I follow Ben Corson on Instagram. I remember when Ben was a star basketball player at Calvary High School back in like 07 as a junior. Might have been 06, actually. It was a while back. He had the Bible study right down the street, and 100-plus students were coming to it in our neighborhood. It was amazing. Ben Corson is an amazing preacher of the gospel. You know, it's called Hope Generation. It's hope. You know, his whole thing is hope. And he's always on some TV here or there, and you know, he has like these poems. We saw it if you're at the Pacific Amphitheater. Like, he gets up and he's like a rapper, and he's got all down. He's just like, hope is dope, you know, and he just rolls these things. And he can go. I mean, he can go. He can go for a long time. If you follow Ben Corson on Instagram, there's all kinds of radical, cool stuff. And yet, you know, the woman of his dreams left him just in the last year. And how that must have crushed him. To do a YouTube video explaining to all of his followers his wife leaving him. To get up in front of the church at Applegate when you're like the next Billy Graham and you got to explain that your wife left you and what people think of that and how they perceive that. And yet he's reaching this next generation as effectively, if not more effectively, than anyone can think of. I mean, him and my son-in-law, Nate, they're just like thunder and lightning, you know? It's pretty crazy. And then he posted a picture this week with his sister who was killed in the car wreck. Because, you know, of course, John lost his first wife, John Corson, his dad, and then John's 16-year-old daughter was killed in the car wreck. I remember very well because I was in Florida at Merritt Island. John Corson was speaking at the pastor's conference in Merritt Island in 1995, 3 weeks after he buried his daughter. And I was staying in the same place with Brian Broderson and John Corson and Damien Kyle. And we're in the car with John Corson. I was like, this guy's 16-year-old daughter. Like, I couldn't even believe that he was there at the conference that he was speaking. But that's the inspiration Ben got from his dad. But then you look at this Instagram post. He's like, my big sister. And there's a picture of little Ben Corson with his big sister. All these things that can buffet us, that crush us, they're meant to work together for good in us. Whether it's physical or life events or, again, slander of character and all these things. Whatever humbles us is a good thing. It might be a painful thing, but God resists the proud and he gives grace to the humble. And so Paul himself said that he prayed three times. And of course, the Lord prayed three times in the Garden of Gethsemane. And I don't know if it's like literally like I prayed Monday, I prayed Tuesday, and I prayed Wednesday, and I let it go to the Lord. Or it's more like, you know, three seasons of prayer, maybe. Like, Habakkuk said, I'm going to build a siege mound. I'm not going anywhere until the Lord shows me what's going on. Habakkuk 2:1. Like, I'm not going to you. The Lord loves persistency. The Lord values passion and the pursuit of God. The Lord loves that. That's why he promises if we draw near to him, he'll draw near to us. And Paul cried out, you know, and the answers to prayer are always going to be yes, no, or pending, wait, right? And how many prayers don't get answered in our time, space, and matter, but maybe get answered after we leave? We don't know the legacy of our life when we're gone. It was, of course, George Mueller who prayed. And boy, did he have amazing ministry. He lived to be 92 there with the orphans there in Bristol, England, back in the late 1800s. And, you know, Charles Dickens and all the people had an opinion about George Mueller and his ministry and the man of faith. But, you know, he prayed faithfully for four unsaved men over the period of about 40 or 50 years. Two came to the Lord during that process, the third one near the end, and then the fourth one at his funeral. You just never know, like, how that all works. So we can pray three times or through three seasons. You know, certain times you just, without even realizing, you just let go of that prayer. You just realize, well, you know, it's just not going to happen. You know, that's all right. You learn to recognize the closed door. And if the closed door is like, no, you're going to have this physical infirmity, your weakness is my strength. Or no, you're going to lose this, and that loss is your gain with me. Then that's what the Lord's going to do. And we're wise to have faith and let him do it and trust him in it. When I'm in a situation that I feel overwhelmed, I fall back on this verse, for sure. Especially the difficult confrontations or these contentious things that can be so difficult in the human experience. Or something's beyond you. Anything that shifts our confidence from us and our abilities to a place of dependency and brokenness before the Lord is a good thing. Now, he's always trying to grow us, so stretch us in new ways and get us to do new things and get us out of our comfort zone, right? Good leadership is finding people that can do what you can't do and paying them to do it, right? That's good management and playing to their strengths. But part of the process with the Lord is playing to your strengths, but also letting him work on your weaknesses to make you a more complete person of who you're meant to be. And if you get to live 85 or 90 years, that's really what it should be. You being fruitful with your strengths and letting God work on your weaknesses where he's magnified in those things. Yeah, that's it. So in our weakness, you have to face this. You need to tell this person, you gotta deal with this thing. You gotta do this thing at work. You got to face this. You got to face this fear. Your worst fear. That's amazing what we think is our worst fear. I'll be very transparent. When we selected the new USA Olympic Junior Surf Team this week, there were a few surfers that were not placed on the team. There were cuts. It's just the way it is. And they had great character, great teamwork, but it's an Olympic team. And in the end, character, teamwork, athleticism, and competition skills. And there are some that are really good at these three, but, you know, there's only so many spaces. This isn't a high school football team like modern day where you roll 100 guys out for a varsity game. It's a tight group, 28, 10 girls. Entire United States. And I got it. Like, you get it when you have to do things like this. One was super grateful for everything. The other was the dad, but basically saying it was the worst thing that could ever been done and da-da-da-da-da, and it was their worst fears. And just, I'm like, no. Your worst fears is when you fear losing your baby and then you do lose your baby. That's your worst fears. Not making the U.S. surf team is not your worst fears. And if it is, life will guarantee you that you'll have a greater fear than that one. We need perspective. Like Ben Corson, hope perspective. Like Sarah Yardley, persevering in England perspective. Like Sarah Hill in Kauai perspective. Like Brian Broderson, almost on a deathbed for 3 years in the late 90s perspective. Early 2000s. Perspective. We just need to understand that these things that happen, whatever it might be to us or people we love and care, we need to understand that if we're trusting God to save us from hell and the grave and the power of the devil, we can trust him with our worst fears. And it's good to have perspective on what those worst fears are and what really is something that's a trial. There's testings, trials, tribulation, and tragedy. And people often confuse testing for tragedy. No, that's not a tragedy. Tragedy is a graveside funeral with a mom and dad and a son for a 10-year-old. That is tragedy.
You've been listening to the Worship Generation Radio Ministry with Pastor Joey Brand. If you would like more information about the ministry of Worship Generation, visit us online at www.worshipgeneration.com, where you can listen to the podcast of today's entire message. Worship Generation is located at 10350 Ellis Avenue in Fountain Valley, California. Our service times are Saturday evenings at 6 p.m. and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. And also follow Pastor Joey on Instagram under the tag name at Joey Brand. Thanks for listening and God bless.
Not ashamed of the gospel. Not ashamed of the one I love. Not ashamed of the gospel. Not ashamed.